before we got derailed on pizza, I was trying to talk a little bit about the experience on the just riding ships and just the travel from North Carolina to Korea. What was that like and what were those memories?
Do y'all remember taking the train across? I wasn't on the train, I don't think.
I remember. Went by Chicago at least one time.
That was in 59. Just the history of things. We came back to the States in 58, drove across the country. In 59, we took the train back across. In 64, we drove across and then drove back.
We drove across.
No, we didn't.
No, 64 was a hopscotch.
Yeah.
Plane trip, and then we drove back.
Right.
Because Margaret was 4 years old, and she wanted to tell everybody everything in every airport.
Alice, do you remember coming back to the States in at the Korean War?
I only remember that we must have flown. I don't remember going to Japan.
But that was on a boat.
Troop ship.
When we were in Japan, I remember being in a dark barracks, and there were bunk beds, and there must have been mosquito netting over the beds. It just was so dark in there. And I was supposed to use the potty, and Grandma Hopper was yelling at me, and that's all I remember.
And that is so helpful, isn't it?
Then our family, I wasn't born yet, but our family went over to Osaka and stayed there. I think maybe the Frank Browns were already there, I'm not sure. But we stayed in Osaka until Daddy could arrange the flight home.
Because Mama was very pregnant with you.
Mama would have been 30 weeks or so by then.
That may be when the Brown kids taught us, or me anyway, how to fool your parents that you had been staying up when they were gone and you were supposed to have gone to bed.
Well, it seems to me you would have been a little young for that at that time. Maybe so, but...
Maybe so. Or else that may have been when we evacuated, when we were waiting to get back.
Yeah, you'd have only been three then.
Yeah, no, that would not have been that.
So then they took they flew back, right, on a troop plane.
From Japan.
From Japan.
Actually, it was a commercial plane they flew back,
was it?
I think.
Yeah. Okay.
And it was a early Pan Am flight.
Yeah. This is 1950 we're talking about?
Yeah.
Pan Am had started their flights, commercial flights, just a couple years earlier, I think.
Well, I guess that was the one that I have a certificate from.
Yeah, I have a
crossing the international date line on the Pan Am.
Yeah, I have a certificate.
Well, we flew Pan Am in 58. I remember that was the one. I don't have a certificate. Margaret has one.
I have one. When we evacuated, I remember we must have flown in through Alaska because they said, "Oh, look, you can see the northern lights." And all I remember was that they were green. And then when we got back on the train, on the plane, somebody gave me this little thing that was metal. It was about this round. And you pushed a little thing, and it would whirl around and make sparks. The metal rubbed against something and made sparks, blue and red sparks. And they said, "See, this will remind you of the northern lights."
Hmm. I believe Daddy said we stopped and refueled in the Aleutians and then on to
Japan.
To Anchorage and then Anchorage to Seattle.
Oh, we were coming back that one.
I just remember that one thing with the northern lights and the little...
So then the next time y'all went out would have been...
58. You would have been a...
I was a toddler.
Three-year-old.
Before we go to 58, in 53, when you went back to Korea, or to Japan, and Granddaddy was already back, did you travel, Grandmom and the three of you, or...?
Daddy came back to the States and got us and took us... from Quitman up to Montreat for a little while, before we...
I think we went down to Daytona Beach at that time, too, didn't we?
Yeah.
We did a family vacation, it was called. Family honeymoon. That's when he went to Montreat, and Montreat was getting rid of their telephones. The city of Montreat was getting rid of its telephone system, which was housed in a house that was right over the Montreat stream. That was the post office. It's across from the present tennis court there. And you could go under the building and because the floors didn't meet too well, and you could go under the building that housed the telephone operator and the post office, and you could find money because it would drop through the holes of the...
The newspaper racks were on the front porch, and it would and coins would fall through the slats.
And so... But you could also see the telephone operator. She was like the one on Andy Griffith, you know. She had a headphone on, and she was poking these and connecting these and connecting these. And there were all these telephones in Montreat that were going to be disposed of. And so Daddy, being the scrounger that he was, said, "What are you going to do with these telephones?" And Mr. Solomon, or whoever was the chairman at the time, said, "Oh, I don't know. We'll just get rid of them or something." And Daddy asked for them. We were at the time we were staying not in Grandma's house, but at the house right at the bottom of the hill from her. I can't remember the lady's
name.
No, Yates, Saunders was
Yates
next
house
door. No, it wasn't
Edwards.
Yates. Miss Edwards, maybe. It was at the bottom of the hill, and it had a big porch. And Daddy built a big crate on the porch to put the telephones in. And there were all different kinds of telephones. They were crank telephones. You would make... So Daddy said, "Well, since I'm the one that scrounged these, I get my choice of the telephones. Who owns what?" So we got the Billy Graham's phone. And that's the one that we used. And it was housed in my parents' bedroom, right beside their bed, in a what had been a window that was plastered over on the back and just was a little alcove where that phone was. And so our phone number was?
Short long.
Short long. And if you would hear a short long, you would answer the phone. And so if it was a long short long, that was the Cranes. If it was two shorts, that was the Seals. And if it was a really long one, that meant everybody pick up because it was a community phone and everybody could hear.
Station ring.
Station ring.
I have a newspaper article from the Asheville paper on them being donated these phones.
Really?
Really? Huh.
About the being donated to Korea?
Being donated to Daddy to take to Korea. Daddy, the reason we moved to, they were ready to go back to Korea, but the war was still going on enough that they didn't have clearance to go anywhere. And they stayed in Montreat, and immediately upon being given permission, they went to Japan. And Daddy settled us there, and he bounced on over to Korea.
How did you travel?
We traveled by a ship.
That was the time that the lady crossed the date line and lost her birthday, and that they made the huge cake in the dishpan.
So you take a train to San Francisco and then board a ship?
Did you stay at home apiece?
Yes.
Yes.
We stayed there for several weeks, I think, I've seen it in some letters, but yeah.
By the time we had been there several weeks, David and I had cased the place.
Well, and that was when Mama was trying to homeschool the two boys.
No, I was 3 years old, but...
Okay, homeschool me and Baron. And Margaret was... That was the next time, mm-hmm. Okay. When Daddy paid you a penny a day.
Home of Peace was... A huge mansion-type house with a big porch.
Maybe a boarding home.
In the Oakland, California area.
It was a institution of the Christian Missionary Alliance, I think. Yeah, go ahead, Margaret.
But they had turned this house into sort of a home for missionaries waiting to go out, waiting for their ship to come in, basically, to go out on the mission field, because people took freighters and they were unreliable, their schedules. And so we would go and wait there until our ship came in and we were ready to go. And they provided wonderful services. They provided food, I think, and of course a place to stay. But they also, the church people would come and crate up stuff to be shipped on these freighters, which was a wonderful service for the missionaries. They knew how to do it, and they
had
a place
time
and
to
wood.
Buy.
And
you had time to focus on buying appliances and some things that you wouldn't be able to get in Korea.
The man that ran the Home of Peace owned a redwood forest, and so he would bring the lumber, the redwood, and so the boxes were wonderful things to be used, for furniture later.
What was life on the freighter like? How long did that take, even? A couple of weeks?
Yeah. A couple of weeks, I think.
It's pretty boring, or did you have activities you could
I don't remember being bored. I mean, we'd eat in the dining room where the ship people were, and there weren't many people, many passengers. It was a little stateroom and rooms around it, maybe, I don't know, 8 rooms, 10 rooms, something like that.
We rode freighters because the freighters allowed unlimited luggage. They had a little passenger unit that would, like you said, 8 or something rooms on it. Around a little main room, and we could go out on certain decks and walk. We could watch flying fish, I remember.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Had boat drills, what do you call them?
What?
Had to put on your vest sometimes, whatever the jackets are called, lifesavers, life vests.
We'd go upstairs and eat in the officers' dining rooms.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember that.
I remember at least one time we went, they had little rims around the table. Mm-hmm.
They always did, because the motion of the ship.
Because the ship would go like this and the plates would slide. But, I mean, I learned how big the waves could be in the ocean. I mean, those ships were enormous. They weren't little things. And they would tip this way, and you could look down and see the ocean right there. It was just outside the window. You're looking down on the ocean, and the other side you were looking up in the sky. And these ships were just going like this.
Maybe y'all know the story, but apparently at some point we were out on the deck and I fell and rolled toward the edge. And
you were a little baby.
Somebody grabbed me. I was three years old. Somebody grabbed me. Yeah.
I don't remember that. Wow.
So.
Yeah, then as Mama said, well, within a day they had put little canvas covers all around there.
The first few days out of San Francisco was very rough waters as you cross it's not the Gulf Stream, but the whatever equivalent, till you got past that, it was very rough until.
I remember going on the ship, and it was in the evening, and we were headed out toward the Golden Gate Bridge. And here you're on this ship, and you think, oh no, we're gonna smash into that bridge. You know, it's not high enough. We're not gonna fit under. And then we go by under there and there's tons of space above.
I remember that from the trip when I was 4 maybe. And I remember it being evening and the color of the sky and the bridge. But we were up on the top deck and they blew the horn.
Oh man.
And I had nightmares that night, and I'm sure it was from that.
Suited the ship.
I remember, probably was the next trip, probably in 65, that I remember being in Yokohama Harbor. Actually, we docked in Yokosuka, which is kind of a second harbor next to Yokohama Harbor, I think, which had military. There was a big cruiser right up opposite us. You remember that?
Yeah, they were having a ceremony on deck.
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
Yeah.
Big military cruiser next to us. You would not have been there.
That was when they left me in America. And Margaret wanted me to tell this story. The ship had been delayed so many times because there was a dock strike and there was all kinds of things. So rather than go and be at the Home of Peace, they stayed on the East Coast and were waiting for things to settle down. So finally it came that they were going to be driving the next day, driving across the country and leaving me all by myself in this foreign country to go to college. And I had already been to King for 1 year, so it wasn't that foreign, but I was sitting there on the bed upstairs in Grandma's house, and I said, Mama, I just wish I could go with you. And Mama was sorting socks or something, and she put them down, and she looked at me, and she said, Alice, we have raised you to stand on your own 2 feet. And if you can't, we have failed.
That's pretty harsh.
She didn't want to feel any guilty about that, so she chopped it right off.
So did you stand on your own 2 feet?
Best I could.
What was travel from? So the freighters would take you to Japan, I assume, and then how did you travel from Japan?
In 59, the freighter took us from Japan down to Taipei, Taiwan, because that was my 9th birthday. I celebrated in Taiwan. And
with Ham Hamilton.
Was that particularly because of cargo, or was that because that typhoon was coming through?
That was because of cargo.
Okay.
Because it was later, then it was after they left there, the typhoon
We were
came.
Supposed to go to Hong Kong.
Really? Oh,
sure. Yeah. And we could not go to Hong Kong because the typhoon was coming, and we had to outrun the typhoon to go to a deep harbor because you did not want to be in Hong Kong with all those other ships in the event of a typhoon.
Are you sure that's not? I don't think Hong Kong would have been too far out the way. Are you sure it wasn't just Taipei?
That was what I was.
Might have been.
I thought we left Taipei because the hurricane was coming.
Yeah, we did. Typhoon. We were supposed to go from Taipei to Hong Kong.
That would be the other direction.
You went to Okinawa sometime.
We left Taipei, went to Okinawa, unloaded some stuff, and we went to church in Okinawa, and then zoomed on up to Busan, and to get into the harbor.
And we were the last train over the trestle before the hurricane got it and took it down.
Going to Taegu, yeah. Huh. My daddy had insisted on the ship cruise. It was a Chinese New Year's weekend, and all the dock workers were drunk, and daddy insisted on getting them to unload the barges that they had put all our stuff onto were in the harbor. Got them into the warehouse, and that night 50 barges went down in the Busan harbor. We had a piano and freezer and all that kind of stuff would have gone down, and we took the train to Jeju, just beat the bridge getting washed out or something.
That was
59.
Mm-hmm. Now, in when we left Alice, so that would have been 65 maybe.
Yeah,
65.
That trip, Granny Montgomery, the Crane's grandmother, was on the freighter with us, and I roomed with her, and she was very entertaining, and I had a great trip.
Betty Boyer was on the one before.
Yeah. The one before was when Betty Boyer was dating, she had been dating Clarence Durham.
I didn't know this.
And she gave one last letter to the purser to be mailed. Do you remember?
I don't remember.
Well,
exactly.
The purser had some letters that he was supposed to give to the dockhands to mail, and he forgot. And he threw this packet. We were standing on the deck above, and he threw this packet across the water, and some of the letters fluttered in. I always wondered about that. But that was the purser whose name was Pilgrim. Do you remember what Daddy said about him?
No.
He would have been a pill if he hadn't been so grim.
I did not know about that romance.
I don't remember all that.
Aunt Betty was on that trip, too.
She taught us how to knit.
She taught us how to knit because we had kite string that we tied balloons to and trailed behind the ship in the wake. They would bounce along. And we also would tie Coke cans until they made us quit because they would cause drag and could have pulled us overboard or something like that, you know.
Oh.
But she taught us to knit on pickup sticks with kite string.
That ship in 59 was the old Colony Mariner, and in 65 was the California Bear.
And the ship in 59, the captain was real gruff. The ship in 64, the captain was very friendly to me. Because of Granny Montgomery, she and I sat at the captain's table. But he was always very nice to me. He missed his grandchildren, and he was the one that was named Captain Cook and looked like Captain Cook. Remember, he was British and had that white mustache.
Huh. Yeah. Well, which time was it, 59 or 64?
65.
Must have been 59 when we had all the cows on board.
65.
That was 65. I wasn't there, but I heard about it.
That was the cargo was cows. I think pregnant cows.
I had forgotten that.
What?
I had forgotten that, yeah.
We did. I was wondering about the second cow we got. I mean, our cow.
The second cow was
it was Church World Service
had brought a bunch of. I was talking to somebody about this. They were long-horned.
Me, I didn't remember that.
Long-horned cows, and except ours had had her horns clipped, but she was white.
Right, I remember.
And we named her Chewing Gum. And
you probably did.
I probably did. And she gave good milk, better than the other one, because the other one had been so traumatized by the war.
The other one died. And I remember it was a great crisis in the house. Daddy was at a meeting in Seoul or something, and here the cow had died, and Mama didn't know what to do with the dead body. And
Because they said, if you bury the cow, they will dig him up and eat him and then sue you because the meat was bad.
Well, anyhow. So then the white cow we had gotten from Church World Service with the agreement that the first heifer calf would go back to the Church World Service. At the moment, they didn't need all the cows. Of course, they weren't that interested in milk. So they gave us one on those conditions, and we took the cow, and first year, a little bull calf. Second year, a bull calf. Third year, bull calf. Seven bull calves. Finally, I think she had a heifer that was given back to the Church World Service, and then the cow died. Something
right.
Like that. Anyhow, so she paid off our debt.
That's almost biblical.
It might have been six.
It was seven. I remember.
That's funny.
You alluded a little bit ago to the furlough where you got to fly around the country and see different parks and things. That's been a neat thing. Dad, you and I went to Yellowstone a few years ago, and it was your first time back since that trip, and that sounds like a really incredible trip. Can y'all share a little on that?
Go ahead.
Daddy
got it from Time Magazine.
Was a tightwad, but he'd seen that there was a Sea America plan, I guess on Time, and he went and checked in the Travel Bureau in Seoul and said, yeah, they had Korean residency permits, so they were eligible as being residents outside the U.S. to take this thing for, what was it, $100 per adult and $50 per kid?
Children under 21.
For 15 days, you could try, or
was
2 weeks.
Was it 30 days? Could, I thought it was. Just, I don't remember. I thought it was 30, but I don't remember.
It was just 2 weeks.
Okay.
But you could see.
On 13 different
you
airlines.
You could fly on like 13 different airlines around.
You could not back.
Kind of wherever you wanted.
So Daddy mapped out this trip for us to see. We jumped all over the country and
starting in Alaska, national forest.
The mission would pay standard fare from Seoul to Asheville. But Daddy just took the main airline to...
Took it to Anchorage and then planned the trip minutely. When we left Anchorage, we began the first of the 15 days.
But we went to Disneyland and a bunch of national parks, Redwood Forest, Yosemite. What were some of the others?
We traveled around before the 15 days started. We traveled in Alaska some.
Which was limited because they had been hit by an earthquake.
A big earthquake.
A big Alaska quake was
and
right before we got.
We saw, I think it was Edward R. Murrow's house, which was sunk up to its eaves in its own front yard. I mean, you could see the eaves, but they were this far above the ground.
And we had planned to go to Mount McKinley, and my father had rented a car to go drive over there, and...
Roads were out.
What?
Roads were out.
Yeah, the roads were out, so we could...
We drove down to Seward, which around the...
Did we make it all the way to Seward? I thought
yeah,
we didn't make
no,
it.
No, we made it down to Seward. We had to go in an early morning convoy through an area they were doing construction on. We drove down just... south of the Anchorage Bay or whatever it is, we stopped and had our picnic breakfast, and the other cars that were in the convoy had gone on down. So we drove on after breakfast, and we were the only car on the road. We went down, and that's when we saw our first moose, when we walked down by a little lake.
My mother wanted to see a moose. And she goes, Joe, there's a lake over there. If I was a moose, I would walk around that lake. Joe, stop the car and let's get out and walk around that lake. So we did.
And we ran upon a moose.
We were walking on this narrow path between greenery and
bushes. Yeah.
Bushes and stuff. And all of a sudden, Daddy said in a whisper, loud whisper, children, step off to the left and do not move and do not talk. And that voice said that there was danger. And so we all did as we were told. And lo and behold, this ginormous moose with all these antlers and stuff walked right by us.
I don't remember him coming right by us. But anyway, that's interesting. Then we drove on down to Seward. I remember it being a little port city, little port town, little fishing village type place. Could we ate at a restaurant, had fried halibut, excellent fish. And then we drove back that night, got back into Anchorage. And we flew, we started our trip. That was the longest night of the year. That was June.
It was the longest day of the year. I remember
June 30th, because on the radio, there was midnight car races without the headlights that
Daddy
were being
said,
broadcast.
If you look out the window, you will not see the sun go down. It will just go around the horizon, and then it will come up the other side.
So then we flew. We left there on Alaska Airlines, which was a small airline then. We flew to Anchorage, to Fairbanks, and changed planes, and on down to Anchorage, Seattle.
Seattle. Mm-hmm. Seattle-Tacoma Airport, where Daddy had made reservations for us at the hotel. And we get to the hotel, and they said they didn't have reservations for us. And Daddy said, I have the letter right here that you sent me. And they said, oh, well, Yes, but we didn't think anybody from overseas could plan their trip 3 months in advance. We didn't expect you to show up. And Daddy was tough, and he said, well, what do you want me to do about it? What are you going to do about it? I have four small children, and a wife, and we are tired, and we need a room. And so that was when, at the Swept Wing Hotel, they put us in the penthouse. Do you remember that?
I don't remember.
And it was a suite.
I don't remember that.
And it was really nice.
We flew from there down to San Francisco and changed and out to Fresno. Mm-hmm. And rented a car in Fresno, and it was hot.
It was like, when we got off the airplane, it was like 117 degrees.
The wind, the breeze was hot in your face.
Yeah, that's right.
Like a hairdryer blowing at you. And we went up to Yosemite and Sequoia.
I remember on that flight, they had come over the loudspeaker and said something about an engine overheating, but that it was going to be fine and blah, blah, blah. And when we landed and we got off behind the engine, you know, these are the old prop planes, I thought that heat was from the engine. And we went into the building, and it was air conditioned. And then we came out the other side, and it was just as hot.
And that was fun going to. I still remember those two parks. That was.
Nice. I remember Yosemite, and what was the other one?
Yellowstone.
Sequoia.
Okay.
Well, we went to Yellowstone too.
No, but we went to Yosemite and Sequoia. Then we went back to Fresno, flew down to L.A.
We got lost on the freeway.
We stayed at a
Christian missionary and
CMA
home.
LA or Pasadena or somewhere there. Mm-hmm. And that's when we got up. Interstates were brand new. Four-lane expressways were brand new. We pulled onto expressway, and a few minutes later we had gotten run off a ramp, and we're back to where we had started.
Yeah. Daddy, that's the same thing that we just passed.
Shut up, Margaret.
And then we stopped and got a hamburger or something, and asking directions, the little guy said, well, first of all, you got to get rid of that car and get a pickup truck so you can see.
I didn't remember that part.
Now, I remember the billboard was a sun... What's the bread, the white bread?
Sunbeam?
Sunbeam bread billboard that had a piece of bread going down in a toaster and then coming back up. And I remember when I saw that the second time and said something to Daddy, oh, there's that billboard. Bread. Shut up, Margaret.
Oh, my.
Then we went to church.
Went to Hollywood Presbyterian Church.
And
that's the first time I ever saw people in a play. We were sitting up in the balcony or someplace, and they marched past us singing This Little Light of Mine in nightgowns.
Huh.
And I remember. Daddy had told us, he said, now, kids, this is a different kind of church. But
I'm not sure that was Hollywood Press.
That was the one in San Francisco,
right?
Oakland. Later.
Oakland. Okay.
But that was interesting. They had a choir. This had been a theater of some kind.
They had a motorcycle on the stage.
What? And they had a stage. I mean, the choir came in singing on a stage up out of the floor. That was quite impressive. But then in Hollywood, this other time, we went to Hollywood Press.
Dick Van Dyke went to.
Well,
really?
I'm sure there are a lot of famous people at that church, and it was much more a regular church, but I remember it was a good preacher.
Then
I've forgotten who it was.
Then we...
Maybe Ogilvy or somebody like that.
We went to Disney World. Mm-hmm. Then when we left L.A., we flew to Phoenix, because there were all these little planes. We connected multiple times. We flew to Phoenix, then from Phoenix to Salt Lake, and we rented a car in Salt Lake, went to the to
was that the time we went?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. To the tabernacle.
I remember that. Yeah, to the pin drop.
Yeah. And I think we saw Salt Lake. We drove by.
I thought maybe that was sometime we were driving through.
No, then we flew from Salt Lake to Billings, Montana. Spent the night in rented a car in Billings and drove down to
Cape Girardeau.
What's right below Montana,
Wyoming
to Cody, Wyoming. Spent the night in Cody at a little motel. That's where we went into the park, you know, where we saw the mountain sheep right by the road.
Yep.
That's the road we took in to see Yellowstone. We saw Yellowstone. We got as far as just the south end of the park where you could see the edge of the Grand Tetons down there, and then went back up and out. Flew back from Cody. I think we flew, changed planes in Idaho and down to Missouri to St. Louis and
sometime
and went to Uncle Peter's and all.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Sometime we went into a national park there near Denver.
That was driving back.
Oh, okay.
Actually,
so when did we go to the Grand Canyon? Was it that trip?
I never went to the Grand Canyon. Would have been 1960.
Maybe that was when you were in the military?
No, it was probably while I was in college, maybe. I mean, I don't know, but it would have been after 1966.
Because we didn't drive anymore after that. We flew.
To Grand Canyon?
Yeah.
No.
When did I go to Grand Canyon?
We went to Grand Canyon.
68, maybe 67, probably 68 or 9, maybe.
When we came, let's see.
By then I thought we flew.
We never flew.
I've never been to the Grand Canyon, so that was not when I was.
It was the spring of 69, I guess.
We bought
maybe
that blue Buick Skylark in Los Angeles, I think, and drove and went by. I didn't figure this all out.
Because at some point, I remember, I went to the Grand Canyon. Daddy wanted to see the sunrise over the Grand Canyon. We got up early, went out to whatever place. It was us and this other family got out of a station wagon, and they had a dog and a little boy. Y'all don't remember this? And they took the harness off the dog and put it on the little boy. And were very apologetic, but they said that the little boy knew not to go too close to the edge. I could have sworn y'all were there.
You mean the dog knew?
I wasn't there.
The dog knew not to go too
close. Alice and I weren't there.
No.
Yeah, when I'd been in 68, when Barron had already been at PC for a year.
And did we drive across the continent that time? Okay. All right.
Yeah.
We flew.
And, yeah. We visited Cousin Ruth and Uncle Peter in St. Louis and landed the night of the 15th night. We landed in Asheville. But just when that ticket would have ended. And did all this for...
And eating.
$100 for parents and $50 for kids. And Daddy only ever knew of one other family that did that. And remember who it was?
No.
It was the Stokes, and we were on the same plane as them from St. Louis to Asheville or something. Somewhere in there, we were on the same plane as them, but it's the only other people we ever knew that took that same kind of a trip.
So what were the furloughs? Well, first of all, how long were the furloughs? And then what were they like otherwise? Where did you stay? Did you travel around? How did school work?
We were 5 years in Korea and 1 year here.
Well, the first furlough, we were in Montreat. And so we all had a year in public school, and that was kind of different. We rented a house in Montreat. The grandparents were there in their house. And we rented a house over what's now on Billy Graham's property there.
Yeah.
Where the parking lot of the Graham office building is.
It was called the Farrier's House. They were missionaries to either Africa or Taiwan.
So that was where we lived that first thing. And we rode the school bus to school.
To Black Mountain.
Black Mountain School. I mean, you could drive right back there in front of the same building where I went to school.
I went to third grade.
I don't know if your building is
third grade.
Yeah, my building is.
Remember your teacher's name? It was Ms. Bennett.
Mrs. Sorrell.
Yours was what?
Ms. Bennett.
I remember that one. I can't remember what my teacher's name was, but I remember being in school. I don't remember doing much in the school, but I did like recess. So we had played baseball.
Well, that was.
I remember riding the bus.
Yeah. What?
I remember riding the bus to school.
Uh-huh.
And that was the year we all got, everyone got mumps. Once again, Margaret started it. Margaret got
David
mumps.
David started it.
I started the mumps.
Oh, mm-hmm. Did you? Okay. And even Daddy got it. And Grandma was most concerned about Daddy because for an adult male to have mumps could go into really bad places. And so all of us were in bed in the Farrier House, and Grandma catered the meals.
Did you get to do other things in Montreat? I mean, we've spent a lot of time there as a family doing a lot of outdoor activities. Were you?
Well, David and I, we played in the stream as always. One thing that year, we played in the stream. I could still show you the big rocks we played on. We'd run the stream this way and that. One day I was standing up on a big rock, and I saw this thing 14 inches long, kind of a big, like a big fish, but it was just kind of floating down in the water. And I thought, well, if I don't catch that thing, I'll never know what it was. So I jumped off in the water and grabbed it. It was sluggish, and it was a hellbender, a big salamander type thing with big, they have...
Do they bite?
No, but they're rare.
Well, but they're fairly extinct now, at least very, very rare. And we had a friend, a Solomon boy, whose father was a professor of biology, and we took it up to him in a bucket, and he pickled it. And I think it's still there in the Montreat College, but I haven't ever been able to get in to view it. Nowadays, it would be illegal to put it in formaldehyde or something, but anyhow.
And that would be Baron jumping in to see what this thing was.
And I remember seeing a big deer across the
road.
Right after church, right kind of across from the Graham House, is that little roadway went down to cross the creek.
And Daddy wouldn't believe it, so we got Grandpa Linton there to verify that those were deer tracks.
Well, before we went to Korea after the war, I had been in kindergarten in South Georgia, and we came up that summer. I guess Daddy was still in Korea. Mama must have driven us up from Quitman up to Montreat, and I went down to play in Grandma's stream. It was by Grandma's house, and so that meant that it was our stream.
I think Uncle Chick helped us move up there, but anyway, go ahead.
Okay. Well, so these kids invited me to go with them. Do you want to see the queen crowned? Well, of course, a little girl likes to watch queens. So they invited me to their house, and...
Who was that inviting you?
It was the Graham kids.
Okay.
Gigi and Ann.
Okay.
Were the two. Bunny was probably too little.
She was my age, yes. She's little.
And so we went up, and there was a television, black and white. That's all there was in those days. There was a television upstairs in their daddy's office. And so we sat on a rug that was made out of a tiger skin. You know, had one of those tigers' mouths open. And there were keys about this big all around the molding up above. And I asked what those were, and those were keys to the cities. Because whenever Billy Graham would go to a different city, they would give him the key to the city. And they were these ornate, you know, like that brass thing just up on the walls.
Huh.
So that was the summer that then when Daddy came, he said, well, what did you do today? Played with the Graham kids. Well, what did you do? We played at Gigi's house. What did you do at Gigi's house? We played in the doghouse. Oh, what was in the doghouse? Pictures. What were the pictures of? Gigi's daddy. Who put them there? Gigi's mommy. Because they had a great Pyrenees, big white dog. Called Belshazzar.
They had a going away party for us, the Grahams did. And so I got a little favor that was a little thing you could stick coins in, nickels, dimes, and quarters in, and then you could pull them back out and all. Well, I remember afterwards I was lying in bed playing with that thing, and I swallowed a nickel. And I told Mama, and Mama was so upset, she conferred with the doctor. I don't think she took me to the doctor, maybe. And the doctor said, don't worry, it'll go on through. Oh, my.
So then the next furlough, that one you're describing, that was
53. That 53. All that nearing.
Oh, yeah, 53. Yeah. And then you were also in Montreat later, 59.
59. We started in on that.
We were in school.
So we were at 58, 59, we were there for the whole year.
And then would Granddaddy have to travel and raise support during that time?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Presbyterian denomination's mission emphasis month was February. And so he was gone a lot then, but in that February, wasn't it, that he had 26 church family night suppers in 1 month?
Could be.
Probably. Some kind of a record.
Put on some weight. Because he said all the little old ladies wanted him to have a bite of their special thing.
Some of that time we would stay with Joseph and Annis Hopper. And I remember my parents would bring back these big bags of pecans from South Carolina. And I remember Granddaddy Hopper would just sit there and just shell the walnuts, the pecans, so I would shell them with him. And
I remember Grandma sitting in maybe this chair, actually, with her long hair going down all the way to the floor, and we would sit back there and brush it.
And she'd go, oh, that feels so good. Do it again.
Huh.
Then next furlough, were you in South Carolina, or where was that?
Georgia.
In Decatur.
It's where your other grandparents were, the Longenecker?
No, there was a place called Mission Haven.
Yeah.
Mission Haven.
The Longeneckers were in Morristown, Tennessee. So
that was the year I went to college.
There were two places that the women of the church had missionary homes. Richmond, where I was born, and which is Mission Court, and Mission Haven in Decatur, next to the Columbia Presbyterian Seminary. They had some homes and apartments and a clothes closet.
Mm-hmm. It's really very nice.
Yeah.
A fully equipped house.
Do you know why you were there instead of in Montreat, where you'd spent a lot of time before?
Probably because we had a place to stay free.
Yeah.
But Daddy took some courses at the seminary, I think. And
the Browns were there then, weren't they? Had the clothes closet, or did they get?
No.
Oh, okay.
Y'all were in high school.
I went to ninth grade. Remember, the high school had burned, so we had split session. We went just in the afternoon.
Really?
Classes.
At Decatur High?
Decatur High. One of their buildings had burned.
Hmm.
So we were and that's part of why we didn't make friends and all. It was hard to be involved in things there.
Didn't you go out for football or something?
What?
Did y'all go out for football?
No, I ran on the track team. Oh. I mean, it was too, well, I didn't know football well enough to try to get on a team and all.
We went swimming at the Y.
Yeah, that's when I really learned to swim.
We rode our bicycles.
Remember Stuart Babbage, I forget what nationality he was.
He was from Australia.
Australia, he was some kind of a theologian or a Bible scholar at Columbia Seminary. In fact, that book by R.C. Sproul, he mentions Stuart Babbage, that's why. And I remember when I was in seminary there later, I remember one of the professors told the story. He said, well, Dr. Babbage went into a used bookstore, and there was a big book bin here of used books for 10 cents and a big book bin over there of used books for 25 cents. And he saw his used book, one of his books, in the 10-cent bin, so he just kind of slipped it over into the 25-cent bin.
He came to King and taught at King the year before my senior year, yeah, I guess. And he taught at King that summer, and he said, I just don't like these songs, these hymns y'all sing about plunging around in the blood.
Well, I agree with
him. We were in Boy Scouts. We went to Decatur Presbyterian Church in downtown Decatur, which was a renowned Southern Pres church. Dr. Davidson Phillips was the pastor, and we went to Boy Scouts there.
Yeah.
And I had in the patrol with Scotty Candler, who was an heir to Coca-Cola, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was the Coca-Cola family?
Huh. Yeah.
I didn't remember him.
That was my first experience in public school. And my folks had taken me the week before it started or something and registered
me. Were you at Winona?
Did you go to Winona Park?
I went to Winona Park. And it was right down the street from our house. I could walk. And they'd introduced me to my teacher, who was this pretty young woman, very nice. And first day of school, I walked to school like I was supposed to. You had to stand in line outside. They let everybody go in, went in, went to the classroom, sat down. She called roll, and she didn't call my name. But while she was calling roll, there were a number of kids. When she called their name, she said, you go up to Mrs. Mazarki's class. And so these kids left. And so at the end, I hadn't been called. Anybody missed. I was missed. She said, oh, you were supposed to go up to Mrs. Mazarki's class. I didn't know who Mrs. Mazarki was. I didn't know where her classroom was. I didn't know anything.
What grade was it?
I was in fourth grade.
Okay.
And she said, oh, will you just go out this hall and go up the stairs? And she's at the end. So I go out, nobody out there, go up the stairs and walk into this classroom where class had already started. And this big, older, very stern woman with a perpetual scowl on her face was Mrs. Mazarki. And I was told this was the combination room, and there was third and fourth grade in there. Well, I thought I was being put back a year. I didn't have any idea what was going on. It was terrifying for me. It turned out they didn't have enough classrooms, and so they did one room where they would combine kids, and she taught the two grades. But I didn't know that. It was a bad day for me.
Well, I guess Joseph went to Winona Park, I guess. If I remember it, lit much later.
The furlough before, when I was in public school and the boys were in the Montreat, in the Black Mountain School, in those days you did not pre-register. And so Daddy dropped me off at the middle school and then took them down to the elementary school. He said, now, Alice, just run up the stairs and go to the principal's office and tell him what grade you're in, and he'll tell you where you're supposed to go. So I went up and I waited in line and got up to the principal's desk.
Obviously hovering parents.
Really?
helicopter parents.
And so he said, I asked my name. I told him my name, and he said, what grade are you in? And I said, seventh. And he said, let me see your report card. And I said, I don't have a report card. Did you lose it? And I said, no, sir, I've never had a report card. Then how do you know what grade you're in? The term homeschool had not been invented yet. And so I said, my mama told me. And he said, take her up to Mrs. Sorrell's room and we'll figure out where she goes later. Well, of course, I stayed in Mrs. Sorrell's room. And then one time when the next class over, the eighth graders were without a substitute teacher, they said, Alice, run over there and tell them about growing up in Korea. And so that's what I did.
I don't remember anything about the classroom and the classes and all it
well,
in
what?
Black Mountain.
in fourth grade.
Had one friend.
All through the year, if you made a mistake or something, you had to put a penny in a little bank up at the front of the school. And so by the end of the year, there were like $7 up there in this thing. I didn't know how much was in there. Well, what I didn't know what they would end up doing with the money, but one day everybody was all excited and they made a big announcement, and it was right before we were going to go back to Korea, and they were going to give it all to me. And that was interesting to me. I mean, I was kind of unique heading out overseas and all, but there was one boy in the class, Lester Blackburn, I think was his name, Blackwell, and he sometimes wouldn't have shoes on, and I thought, man, they should have given that to him, but I wasn't really confident enough with all these kids mm-hmm. all excited giving me this money to give it to Lester to get him some shoes with. But anyhow,
friend that year was a boy named Wesley Melton from Black Mountain.
Wesley Melton?
Yeah, Wesley Melton. And Wesley was killed in Vietnam, got him a Congressional Medal of Honor.
Huh.
Because I tried to look him up.
I remember one little girl named Sherry invited me to come to her Baptist church there on Montreat Road one Sunday night. So my parents, helped get me there or something, and we went to church together. She was very nice. I think she was trying to convert me.
I don't know that was it, Baron.
We were fourth grade, Margaret.
When you're ready, I'd like to jump back to Korea and talk about the teenage years in KCA, unless there are more furlough stories.
I was the first boarding school student. The reason being, my parents did not want there to be a school that was across one river and two or three bridges that had been bombed during the Korean War. So they and a group of Southern Presbyterian parents got together and started this school in Taejeon, which was halfway between us and Seoul, and it would be a boarding school. Only I was the first child, the oldest child on the station. The Brown kids were at the time going to Japan. They lived with their aunt and uncle in Japan and attended a school there. But for our boarding purposes, I was the first one. And so we went, I went and lived with the
Grouchon
principal and his wife, who had a baby girl, and we lived in various different homes because for the first 2 years, I guess, the dormitories weren't built. For the first year, I guess it was. And then after Christmas, some Canadian girls had learned that there was a boarding department, and so their parents sent them from Edie, which was not that far from Chunju. And so there were two sisters that I roomed with. By that time, we were living in a room in the school. And it was our dormitory room. It would later be a classroom. And so then the second year, I guess, they started putting up the girls' dorm, and it was the girls' dorm and the boys' dorm, and there was one wing for each. And then the next year they built what became the girls' dorm across the quad from where it was. And it was wonderful to me to be in a school with other people, although it was very lonely and scary to be by myself. So I felt much better after Christmas when there were three of us. And there would be day school kids that would come from the Baptist mission that was right proximal to us. It was up on the hill, and their students would come. So in the daytime, we would have more kids than just the boarding department. And it was just fun to be with other kids in my class, because in Korea, I had always been homeschooled, and that was just me.
So for all of you, with the exception of Furlough, were you at KCA from 7th to 12th grade?
Boy, I didn't want to go. I just, even though you guys were there, I did not want to go. I cried. I didn't want to go to KCA.
I don't remember fighting going to KCA, but it was very strange. I mean, it was just such a total change in life. I mean, David and I were great buddies, and we'd do stuff with chickens and all kinds of animals and stuff and spend our day. We'd go down to the market and stuff together and play outside with Korean friends. And here I was with these American kids, and that was really hard. I wasn't somehow as either as good a student or wasn't as well prepared as the other kids. I got to KCA, and there were like five girls in my grade, and maybe one girl one grade up who was with us, Barbara, I think. And then I remember we went up to the Bozeman's house for our English class, and I remember they were spelling words, working on spelling, and I got the word tomorrow, and I spelled it T-O-M-O-R-R-O-R, and that sounded pretty good to me. Well, there was these five girls there, and they all laughed, and that was hard. I mean, it was Dottie Robinson, Laura Bozeman, and
Carol Stokes.
Carol Stokes, and I can't remember who all else, but there were five of them, I think. And Schoengert was in your grade, I guess.
Schoengert and Krim were in my grade. At that point.
So far, all you've told us about your schooling, Uncle Barron, is that you liked staring out the window in recess. So.
Well, that's right. They didn't have any questions on the test about the habits of Orioles.
Do you remember the little boy from Pentecostal or something mission?
From what mission?
Pentecostals or something. They drove in a little Japanese minivan thing. They would come into the gate. They're massively obese parents.
That was the Hills.
Hills, okay. And this little boy, he was short and obese also. He would go running across the yard. There's a ditch out there in the front yard of the school building. He would trip in the same place, bounce back up, and every day.
Well, by the time I went back to teach there at KCA, his parents had adopted triplets, three Korean boys. I think one of them died. It was like Abraham Lincoln Hill, Douglas MacArthur Hill, and I forget what the third Hill was. George Washington Hill, that was what it was. But then I came here to down into Seymour, Tennessee, and they were known in the Johnson Bible College community. That was interesting to me.
Were they a Pentecostal or something group? Maybe
Assemblies.
Not.
Something like that, yeah. Church of
Assemblies of God, Church of God, something like that.
Uncle Barron, I was told to ask you about your prowess in killing rats while you were at KCA.
Well, I mean, you know, sometimes you got it, sometimes you don't. So at KCA, they decided to dedicate a field right by the school. It probably belonged to the school, right? Dedicated to being an athletic field. And there were lots of rats.
It was
living,
rice paddy tier.
It was rice paddies. And in the dikes, there were all these holes, and all the rats lived there. And so I or somebody proposed, well, let's have, see if we can kill, how many rats we can kill. And I think
And you kept your tails on a string. We tied them together.
That's right. I thought, what do you do to prove that you've killed these rats?
How did you kill them?
I don't remember.
Did you have a BB gun?
No,
we may have just hit them with sticks. It beat Samson collecting the foreskins, okay?
I was wondering if somebody was going to say that.
Well, anyhow, so I seemed to get the most of them. I guess other people weren't that interested in...
Well, we would go down there and we would dig into a tunnel of them, and rats would come running out, and we'd whack them and kill them. And I was eating in the dining hall when we were doing that campaign. We were in the dining hall in the main school building there, and From my seat, I saw a rat heading down the hall of the school. I up from the table, raced down the hall, stepped on him at a full run, squashed him, and, I had me a rat.
Well, one time, at the same time, the government had the other thing that I forget we talked about earlier.
The Christmas trees.
What? Christmas trees. Well, it was the same dictator. I think Park Chung-hee had come in, and he wanted to get rid of all the mice and rats. And so you could bring mice or rat bodies to such and such a place and is in town. And if you gave them a certain number of dead bodies, they would give you a pencil. Well, David and I figured out, well, these mice are much easier to deal with than the rats. And much smaller, too. And you could go out in the rice paddies and any grasslands around, and they would build these little nests that would kind of hang up in the top of the grain or the grass. And you could just look around and find them, you know. So if you found them, then you'd get all these little fingertip-sized mice. And so we got lots of pencil.
I'd forgotten that. That reminds me of the little girl in the daughter of the missionaries in South Sudan who... We were cleaning out their grain storage closet and got into all those little nests of rats and had all these little babies in a cardboard box. And this little three-year-old or whatever, two or three-year-old, she wanted to have one for a pet. Her dad said, no, you can't. So she would be taking one at a time and feeding it to the cat, and the cat would enjoy it. And after about 10, after about 10 of them, the cat was, do I have to eat another? I'm sorry, that's another story.
That oh, my. Story. Well, in America, people think we're so cruel. But anyhow.
Life of missionary kids.
What's that?
So are your progeny going to think that?
Yeah, well.
In boarding school, is that when you were able to get involved in Boy Scouts?
Yeah. When I first went to KCA, it was only Peter Robinson and me interested, I think. Or maybe the Brownlee boy did. Anyhow, they arranged that we could be part of a Korean troop or make a troop under a Korean. Well, that never really worked out. We went to one or two meetings, and I did learn some songs that I still remember. That didn't ever. But then, shortly afterwards, and I guess when David came, our troop was gotten up, and we participated. I enjoyed it. The thing
is under the Far East Council.
Yeah, the thing I remember was that there was just like in America, I think. One of the great things about Boy Scouts is it introduces you to a lot of things with all the merit badges. Who would have thought as a kid you would think about looking at the stars and the constellations and going to visit mines and all kinds of things. So making you get out and camp out a certain amount and all this.
You need to talk about the Boy Scout Jamboree at the beach.
What about it?
The American military on a Boy Scout Jamboree camp one summer at the beach. I don't remember if you were old enough or if it was just Barron, but the American military was providing the meals, which included little boxes of cereal, which no American child in Korea had regular American cereal, on a regular basis. And those were little boxes of single serving, and you could tear them open and use them as put milk in them and use them as the container for the cereal that you ate. Well, Barron.
Probably why I have diabetes now.
Because the boys it was supposed to be, how long was it, a week or something like that?
I think it was a week.
In
maybe two.
If it was 2 weeks, then it was in the first week. At any rate, the military had figured out the supplies that they needed for this number of boys for this number of days. However, they were not they were not aware that the boys would want to start a contest of who can eat the most for breakfast. And so within a short span of time, the military had been eaten out of cereal that they had planned for the kids to use for the whole time. And so they had to restrict them to just 2 or 3 boxes of cereal per breakfast.
Okay. Yeah, but I remember going to, that was Camp Sea Range, it was called. It was at a Hawk missile site, I think. It was a missile site there.
It was a missile test.
What?
It was their test site. It was
test.
There were 7 or 9 or something batteries down the Korean Peninsula. It was part of the early warning border, but they would each base would yearly take a missile to Camp Sea Range and fire it off to test fire to practice.
Okay,
fire.
Well,
So it didn't have missile the rest of the year when they weren't test firing. It was just a empty base, and that's when they used it for the scout camp.
I see.
Wasn't there some kind of story where you were camping and there was a North Korean boat sank, or did I make this up? Maybe I watched a movie and thought it was you.
There were some North Korean spies. There was the Camp Sea Range, and about 10 miles inland from there, there was one of the missile battalions there, and there were some spies had broken into the base there, and they were a little afraid for us and added security because we were doing an overnight My Order of the Arrow
camp out
was
ordeal, yeah.
Was during that I was, and they would just take us out on one section of the base, and you'd be dropped out at night, and you had to find yourself a place to camp out and make do, and yeah.
Were you still in Korea when the Pueblo incident happened?
It was
when
Pueblo incident.
Right after I came to college.
Okay, because I was at KCA then, and they had us do evacuation drills and keep a packed suitcase under our beds. It was very tense then.
I heard about that when that was right after Christmas vacation, because I had been at Grandfather Longenecker's house, and he got a call from King College saying that the local Bristol television station wanted to interview me about growing up in Korea. When would I be back, and when could I do it? So we set up a time. Well,
was that because of the Pueblo?
No, it was before then. And so I was in the dressing room getting ready to go on stage or whatever you call it in front of the camera when I heard about the Pueblo.
You.
And I did not want to be asked about any of those questions.
Maybe it was my senior year.
I did not want to be asked questions about that because I didn't want to speak out about Korea. Fortunately, whoever interviewed me had not heard the news report, which I had caught, and did not ask me any questions. Subsequently, when I went back to campus, and I don't remember the questions that he asked or anything, when I went back to campus, I started monitoring all newscasts, because the problem was, it was a tiny tidbit, and I was interested in what was happening in Korea, and they would give different little tidbits of information on the half hour. So I carried a transistor around with me, and between classes and everything, I was listening. We didn't have internet, so you couldn't catch up on news.
January 68, yep.
That would have been my senior year.
You know, I have a picture of me standing by the Pueblo in Pyongyang.
Uh-huh.
The thing I remember...
You saw it when you were up there?
You know, the it was taken on the west coast, east coast of Korea, and somehow at night, somewhere along the way, the North Koreans managed to move it from Wonsan Harbor all the way around to
other side of Korea.
The other side of Korea. I don't know how military and navies and all let them do that without America trying to recapture it, but it's docked on the river in Pyongyang, though.
Maybe they mail it. Maybe they sail it back around the world.
Maybe so.
Instead of going around Korea.
The thing I remember about that was that we all had to have an evacuation plan.
I do remember that. We were at KCA, yeah.
We were at KCA and talking to Mama and Daddy and them saying that if we had to evacuate, they would come and get us, but they would send us to the States and that they would stay and that we were to go to you. And that we were old enough.
And I did
enough,
not know they, any of this.
And they were going to stay.
Huh. Wow.
That's what I remember.
Well, I was in college, but they must have said that you were going to stay with Alice.
That's what they said.
Yeah. They didn't trust you.
Wow.
Well, no wonder. Then he left college and went into the military without telling his older sister.
Well, that was
1969. I got a call from the second brother saying, Baron did not want me to call you until he was on the bus. What bus? Oh, well, he decided to drop out of college and enlist in the service. What?
See, and they're fixing my ears now for me. Just think about that.
It was a good deal for you, huh?
That's
well,
right.
I was the senior member of the family in this country, and here I was in dereliction of duties because Baron was going into the military during Vietnam, and I had no say in the matter.
Well, that was right.
Let's. I'd like to hear more about kind of the college years in a little bit, but if there's any more talk about KCA, I'd like to wrap up that and then kind of move on to leaving Korea.
In the dorm at KCA, you know, the guys were in one dorm opposite the gals, so that first 2 years that I was there, Baron was in the dorm with me, and Alice was across the way, I guess. I remember getting pretty sick and being over, I guess it was a flu. It was over in Aunt Betty's. Boyer was a school nurse. She and dorm mother for the women's, and so she put me in the bedroom over an extra bedroom in her apartment and watched over me. Aunt Betty had raised me. I mean, she'd known me all my life.
Yeah.
That's the first time anybody ever told me that I snored louder than anybody they'd ever heard.
And wasn't the last time.
Last time was my wife before I got CPAP.
I thought maybe it was your kids and grandkids and nephews and nieces when we went
they used to
camping up on.
Yeah.
They used to say I shook the house and all, but CPAP cured that. Anyhow, we lived in the dorms and 100 yards away was the school building. We'd go over there for our meals. We guys weren't allowed in the girls' dorm or vice versa. We had dorm parents, different people over the years. I remember, I guess it was. Ralph English was there for a while, and
the first year, were the Groschels ever there while you were there?
No, yeah, it was before me.
That was the first year.
And then we had who was it?
Alma Stedding.
Ms. Stedding took over until Ralph English came, and he took over the boys.
Okay.
But Ralph English was there in the dorm. He was living way down in room one. I was all the way around in room 9.
So you could get away with murder.
I remember I was rooming with Steve Linton.
And trouble.
We listened early morning, listened to the radio, to the news, and turned it on. It said, the president is dead, and Kennedy had been shot. And we ran down. I woke up Mr. English and told him Kennedy was dead. He yelled at me. You don't joke around this way.
That's exactly what happened to me in the girls' dorm. I had the radio on, waking up, and I heard that Kennedy had been shot and killed, and so I ran screaming down the hall of the girls' dorm. And Aunt Betty was our dorm mother, and she came out and she said exactly those words. Alice, you don't joke about that. I said, it's no joke. And
who was that?
When Kennedy was killed.
Who was that you talking
to? Betty Boyer.
Aunt Betty Boyer.
Okay. Well, that day, I was in ninth grade, I guess. But I was up in Seoul arranging for the yearbook, making arrangements for the yearbook. And Thomas Shim had shown me how to do things. I was only in ninth grade, but I had traveled up to Seoul, spent the night in a Methodist guest house, or maybe it was Northern Presbyterian guest house, and I was going to eat breakfast, I think, with one of the missionaries. And I went to eat breakfast with him, and he said, "Well, Baron, I got some sad news for you, that President Kennedy was assassinated." So I remember that. And then that day, I was selling advertisements of what it was for the yearbook. I had to go to the Bondo Hotel for one of the ads. And the Bondo Hotel was across from the American Embassy. I remember seeing the flag at half staff on the embassy because of Kennedy. So,
Mama and Daddy said that day, people from all over the city came to give their respects mm-hmm. and to say how sad they were that the president had been killed.
I was the editor of the yearbook that year, and it wasn't right for me. I mean, I was too young, but there were various things that had been done by other people already and that they needed to get done and that I knew how to do. So I took care of them, but it wasn't right for me. I did that a lot in high school.
Well, you sure had a lot of leadership stuff. I always felt like
It was too much for me, and I didn't do other things in high school that I'd rather I should have done. But anyhow, I just did things like the yearbooks, for instance. You know, you'd expect people to have some sort of, you know, literary or, you know, some sort of aesthetic understanding of putting pictures on the page. I would just. I'm getting this done, and this is it. You know, if you don't like it, well.
Part of that was just the high school was so small.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Margaret, did you have a different, you were there after everybody else. Did you have a different experience, do you think? Or was it similar?
Similar. I mean, it was bigger. There were probably more kids there. I enjoyed it. I don't have anything major to share. I think we had more sports stuff. Maybe we played other American high schools in the country. There were like three of them.
You were in Little Women.
I was in the play of Little Women. Y'all were in plays, I remember.
Yeah. I wasn't a very good actor either. I just did it because it was...
I wasn't either.
They needed somebody.
Yeah, no.
But
I'm not a drama
But
player.
When I went there in seventh grade, I was the smallest boy in the junior, senior high school. And at recess, we would always physical ed, divide into two teams and play football. Well, Frank Groeschel, the principal, weighed 350 pounds, and he had played pro football. Well, so they would always choose up, and there were bigger boys on one side, and some of the bigger boys and small boy and Groeschel would be on the other side. Well, whenever it came time for our team to have the ball, Frank Groeschel would say, "Now, I'm going to give the ball to you, and you just run behind me." He just blast out of the way. And so I'd get the glory, you know, carrying your football.
Those years, was KCA on kind of an American schedule, like August to June or something?
Yes.
Back in Chenju during the summers?
And during the time that I was there, they had regular, just about every spring, the Korean university students would try to topple the government, and they would give threats about they were going to march north and join with North Korea and all this other type of stuff. And so the military government would close them down. All meeting gathering places were dangerous because they could spawn these demonstrations. So They would close in the spring. They would close the schools early and send all the kids home. And it did not make me happy that they never closed KCA or sent us home. We always still had to go to school same as usual.
You didn't rebel enough.
That's true.
I always like that verse in the spring of the year at the time that kings go to war.
I remember, here's a story on David. I remember in seventh grade, my first birthday away from home, and early that morning, David came over to the girls' dorm and brought me a present with two necklaces in it.
Necklaces?
Yeah, and I still have them, or at least the charm part of them.
Huh.
That meant a lot to me.
I didn't know he had it in him.
I didn't either, and I was so surprised because he would have had to buy them in Seoul, you know, sometime before when he was there. He would have had to plan ahead to do that.
Well, I think I taught you a lot of things, David, but I don't think I taught that to you.
I was amazed.
One of the things I remember at KCA was when it came time to take college boards. And I don't remember having taken any standardized testing before I took college boards. And I had to go up to Seoul, and we spent the night in a yagwon somewhere, in an inn somewhere, and then took a cab or something across Seoul to the Seoul American School, and went into this classroom, and we took the test. Well, it was kind of interesting, you know, taking this test. Things like the college board, they had, I remember, a map image, and you were to try and figure out, you'd say what the distance from here to there was, like an old road map, and it has it on there. And I was trying to figure out how to read a map and things like that, you know, things that we never did in Korea. But I took this test. I came out of there thinking, well, I didn't miss any of the math. Turned out I must have missed a few. But that was really scary, going to take college boards and not knowing anything about taking standardized tests.
Well, you know, one thing that was different in that time period from now is now, you know, kids prepare for years for these tests. And we just went and took them.
That was truly a test then.
But the same was true for my husband. He said he had no idea what he was doing. He just was told he needed to go take this test, and he went and took the test.
Yeah.
So it was just a different age